Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The 2016 baseball season is now underway, and it's a time when all fans have that hope that this is the year for their team. What are the prospects for the Boston Red Sox, the New York Yankees, and a host of other teams? And what have these teams done in the offseason to strengthen their lineups? We've got lots of questions for our panel today on the Vermont Edition annual start of the baseball season program. With us today, Burlington Representative Kurt Wright. Kurt is definitely a New York Yankee fan. And VPR's Mitch Wurtschlieb, who is an enormous passion for the Red Sox. Mitch lives and dies with the Red Sox. We're great to have both of you here today. We had hoped that Aaron Cofield, who is sports director at Fox 44 News, would be with us today, but she is under the weather and is unable to join us. We hope that she feels better soon, and we look forward to having her on our All-Star Break program in the middle of July. Mitch and Kurt, welcome to the program. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks for having us, Bob. It's always a pleasure.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. What are your thoughts about the game of baseball? Some people think baseball is incredibly boring. What do you enjoy about the game? We're going to talk a lot today about the Red Sox and the Yankees, but we know many of you root for other teams. Who are they and what are their chances this year? Is instant replay good for baseball? Should it be expanded? Is it time to allow some of the baseball superstars who use steroids, is it time to allow them into the Hall of Fame? Or perhaps not? And what are the chances that Major League Baseball will return to Montreal anytime soon? Your thoughts about baseball, 1-800-639-2211. Mitch, let's start with you. The Red Sox have finished in last place in each of the last 2 years as this new season gets underway. What are your thoughts about how the Red Sox will do this year?
Well, first of all, Bob, why sugarcoat it? The Red Sox have finished in last place 3 out of the last 4 years, and the only saving grace in between was that they won the World Series in 2013 in between that. So, you know, my predictions, as you have gleefully pointed out over the last couple of baseball shows, have been terribly wrong. And to make one now is going to be very difficult because I like to see at least one go through the full rotation. We've only gotten 2 starts so far for the Red Sox, with David Price being a very good start, Clay Buchholz a not-so-good start. We've seen the good, we've seen the bad. I'm hoping we don't see the ugly as we get to Joe Kelly and then Rick Porcello and Stephen Wright, who's filling in for the 5th spot. I will say that the thing that encourages me most about the Red Sox is the new head of baseball operations, and that's Dave Dombrowski, because he made some fantastic moves in the offseason. I fully applaud them. He got David Price, this terrific pitcher, to come in and be the ace of the staff. He has strengthened the bullpen with a guy who happens to be on the DL right now in Carson Smith. And, you know, I think that Dombrowski wants the Sox to win now. So he has moved Hanley Ramirez over to first base. He had a terrible season last year, but they've already shown that they are willing to take another huge contract and disappointment in the guy known as Panda, Pablo Sandoval, and actually start him on the year on the bench in favor of Travis Shaw, who's been very good. You know, overall, I think the Red Sox are going to not finish in last place this year. They're not going to be in the basement. But I think there are too many pitching questions in the rotation. And unless Dombrowski, who I really think could be the surprise wild card X factor, the general manager in essence, you know, the head of baseball operations, unless he makes a huge move to strengthen up the pitching staff, I don't see them making the playoffs this year.
So, Mitch, some of our listeners might be thinking, why does it matter so much who the general manager is? Why does it matter?
It matters because these are the guys that call the shots and fill the roster. And it's the players that are on the field that are going to make the difference. And, you know, there are different philosophies. And some teams are hampered by a smaller market and they don't have as much money to spend. You know, Kurt Wright doesn't have that problem being a Yankees fan. But neither do I as a Red Sox fan. Let's be clear about that. The Red Sox have a lot of money. But the general manager sets the tone for the kind of team you want. Do you want to be a team that's very heavy with pitching, that relies on power pitchers? Do you want to be a team that relies more on the bats and has a big offense that's going to carry you through games? The general manager is somebody that's going to make these big decisions, put the right players hopefully on the field, and that's, you know, eventually it's what's going to get you to the finish line or on the outside looking in.
So, Mitch, you mentioned the Red Sox did sign pitcher David Price in the offseason to be the ace of this staff. I think the contract is worth over $220 million over a seven-year period. In the past few years, the management of the Red Sox insisted it wasn't important to have a so-called staff ace, and so they really didn't have one. Do you think they made the right decision this year?
Yeah, and you can see just how well that worked out last year when they were joking before the season started about, oh, we've got five aces on the staff. There's no one guy who's going to be dominant. Look, the Red Sox play in the American League Eastern Division. It's one of the toughest divisions to pitch against. This is where all the heavy hitters are. Jose Bautista with Toronto and Josh Donaldson, the Yankees in their murderer's row. You know, you've got Mark Teixeira ripping the cover off the ball right now, Starlin Castro. You go up and down these teams, and you've got to have great pitching. You've got to have at least one guy on your staff who's going to be what they call a stopper, who if you start to be on a losing streak of 3 and 4 games, you know that he's going to start that fifth game. He's going to stop the bleeding. The Red Sox didn't have that last year. They had a bunch of guys who really struggled, and they were relying on a rookie, Eddie Rodriguez, who's hurt, unfortunately, this year to start the season, you know, to pitch well. And it was disastrous for them. Even when they started playing better towards the end of the year, it was far too late. So I like this idea that you've got to have at least one ace. I really think they're going to need to bolster their pitching staff even more because there's just too many question marks as you get to the 3, 4, and 5 starters right now.
Today in the program, it's our annual baseball show. We're looking at the 2016 season. What are your thoughts? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Perhaps you're a Red Sox fan. Would love to know what you think about this season. You could be a Yankee fan, a Mets fan. Lots of people root for different teams up here in Vermont. We often hear from people who are Cardinal fans and also Pirate fans. Love to know how you feel about the start of this baseball season and what baseball means to you. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. 1-1. Kurt, let's look at the Yankees. What's the outlook for your team this year?
Well, first of all, I thought it was very interesting to hear Mitch talking about how rich the Yankees are as he was talking about a $220 million contract they just shelled out for a seven-year contract on David Price and the fact that they're able to sign Sandoval and then not even play him. I think they're doing okay there with the spending of expenditure of big bucks in Boston. So let me start with that, Mitch. In terms of the team, I think the Yankees, it'll be similar to last year. The Yankees have starters who Tanaka is a solid number one starter. He hopefully can stay healthy. Pineda can be dominant at times and brilliant at times, but he has had trouble pitching through a full season, and he also seems to weaken in the second half. Eovaldi, sort of same thing. He's, you know, relatively young guy that we got from Florida last year, and he can throw up to 99 or 100 miles an hour, but he gives up a ton of hits and has not yet quite developed into what you would expect from that type of a thrower. Then at the end of the rotation, you have CC Sabathia, who I think he won the number five spot simply because of his contract. I think actually Nova probably should and may end up in that spot if CC doesn't do what they hope. Obviously, so far the first three games I've liked what I've seen in terms of the bats, but it's 159 games to go. But Starlin Castro, the new second baseman that the Yankees traded Adam Warren to the Cubs for, is certainly off to a monster start in these first three games against the Astros, driving in 8 runs, hitting a couple home runs. And, you know, if he is a big contributor, I think that is going to help immensely. Of course, the Yankee bullpen is potentially the best bullpen in baseball with Betances, Miller, and Aroldis Chapman, who will join us around May 9th. And they literally, those three guys may, I would say, if they're healthy, would set an all-time record for relief pitching in terms of strikeouts. So I think the Red Sox are significantly stronger this year with David Price. I think the young nucleus of players that they have developed are exciting, and with another year's experience, they are going to be bona fide contenders, I think. Toronto will be still going to be solid, but I don't think they may not get as big a year out of Josh Donaldson as they did last year. I don't think they can count on that. And they've lost David Price, so they might not be quite as good as they were last year. Buck Showalter certainly will keep probably the Orioles in contention. And then Tampa, and I will say about Tampa, I hope that Tampa, you know, and soon Major League Baseball shuts them down and does move them to Montreal. Tampa has had a good team for many years now, and they continue to draw, you know, really very poor attendance. And I think if you can't, with the teams that they put on the field, competitive every year, if you're not going to draw some solid attendance, let's get them up to Montreal. Let's get a new ballpark built in Montreal and get them up there in the American League East in Montreal with the Red Sox being up there 18, 19 times a year and the Yankees being up there 18, 19 and Toronto being there. I think that could be a really winning formula in Montreal.
Let's go to our callers and start with Dell, who is calling from Worcester. Hi, Dell. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I am a longtime Red Sox fan, but I actually started out, I lived in upstate New York. My mother was a Yankees fan, and it's my mom who got me into baseball, and I became a Dodgers fan. And so we competed every year. When I moved to New England, I got into the Red Sox, and now I love talking baseball with my grandson. Not sure quite why he's so into baseball, except maybe it's because he was born in 2004, and that was the Red Sox' big first year. So anyhow, I love the pace. The only time I don't have VPR on my radio is when I'm listening to Red Sox games, because I don't have a TV, but it's perfect way to spend summer evenings.
So, Dell, when someone says to you, baseball, that is so slow, that is so boring, people are standing around most of the time, what do you say to them?
Well, you know, actually, maybe it is better that I'm listening to it than watching. I love going to games, too. I haven't been to that many, but I there's something, it's just the perfect pace for a summer evening. Mm. And when I'm listening to it at home, I can be doing things, and I love listening to the commentators and just knowing each player, and each player gets his chance, and it really works for me. I'm 69 years old, but my 11-year-old grandson loves it too, so what can I say?
Dell, many thanks for your call today. And if you'd like to let us know how you feel about baseball, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Your experience, how you got into baseball, what you enjoy about it. As Kurt mentioned, maybe baseball will return to Montreal in the not-too-distant future. Your thoughts about that? 1-800-639-2211. Kurt, you were talking about the Yankees and your optimism for the season. What concerns you the most about this team?
Well, I think that, you know, we continue to have, last year, for example, we got the surprise, I think, of A-Rod hitting 30 home runs at 40 years of age and with all the problems that he's had, not the least of which was steroids, but also of which was two hip operations. You know, so he's playing on repaired hips. He's 40 years old. As a DH, he did manage to hit 30 home runs and drive in 85 to 90 runs. I don't know whether we can expect that again with him at 41 years old. He faltered down the stretch. I think age started to catch up with him. So I think there's still some age questions, though we are getting younger. But again, I think that probably the biggest question will be the starting pitching. Because again, you can't go anywhere if you don't have starting pitching. We have a great bullpen, but you got to get to the bullpen. That bullpen is just dynamite. If you can get to the seventh inning with a lead with Betances, Miller, and Aroldis Chapman when he comes back, you got a chance to win potentially a lot of games. But so the key question is, you know, is Sabathia going to stay in the rotation, or will we go to Nova? Can Eovaldi, you know, become the starter that the Yankees have envisioned? Can Tanaka hang in there and stay healthy throughout the year? Pineda, same type of question. I think it's the starting rotation. I think the bats, and I guess the other question is, can they win? you know, Ellsbury also got injured last year. And as you as a Red Sox fan know, and Mitch does, that, you know, Jacoby Ellsbury can be one, a dynamite offensive player when he's on the field and healthy, but he has a lot of injury problems. And last year he missed a big chunk of the season. And when he was in there, he wasn't as good as you wanted him to be as a Yankee fan. And Gardner, who was stealing 50 bases a year, for some reason just stopped even trying to steal. He stole about 20. He's also had some injury issues and melts down in the second half. So I think for the offense, can Gardner and Ellsbury stay on the field healthy and for the whole year and really ignite the lineup from the top, get on base, steal bases, and get that offense moving?
Mitch, would it be fair to say that, as Kurt was talking about the questions about the starting rotation for the Yankees, that the Red Sox face many of those same questions? Once you get past David Price, boy, it's the great unknown.
Yeah, I mean, they've got similar problems. It's really interesting. Even in that Yankees' second win of the year, they won 16-6 against Houston. You think, okay, well, you know, that was easy. But the fact is, Michael Pineda struggled in that game. He gave up a grand slam and two solo home runs. But the Yankees are built for offense, and when they've got Teixeira and Castro and these guys, you know, tearing the cover off, it doesn't really matter if your starting pitcher gives up six runs. The Red Sox, I don't know that their offense can maintain that same kind of covering up pitcher mistakes. And, you know, right now you got nothing but question marks with these guys. Rick Porcello had a horrible spring. I don't put much stock in spring training results. The final scores of games are essentially meaningless, but the individual performances by these players does matter. And Porcello's ERA was almost 10. It was almost double digits. Whatever struggles he was having last year seemed to have carried over to the spring. You know, and he says, look, I'm just working things out. They all say that. You know, when I can turn it on when the games matter, we'll see. But after you get past David Price, Clay Buchholz had a terrible first outing for the Red Sox, couldn't get out of the fourth inning, gave up four runs in the first inning. Yeah, it's one start, and I'm willing to give him another chance. But Kelly, Joe Kelly, is a guy who throws super hard but has had control problems. You don't know what you're going to get from him. Porcello, as I just mentioned, Stephen Wright is a knuckleballer. You never know what you're going to get out of those guys, and I love watching them pitch because it's an adventure. And he's filling in for Eddie Rodriguez, who's on the DL right now. So all kinds of questions for the Red Sox. Their offense looks good early, and I have all the faith in the world in guys like Mookie Betts, who I think is honestly could actually win an MVP this year if he stays healthy. What an exciting young player to watch. Jackie Bradley Jr., I have high hopes for him. I really like the Red Sox offense so far. Big Poppy's hit two home runs in his first two games of the year. Hanley Ramirez looks good at the plate. He's taking the ball the other way. He's not trying to pull everything. A lot of optimism there, but the starting pitching really has me concerned.
Today in the program, it's our annual baseball show. Your thoughts about baseball, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. It's our annual baseball show. With us, VPR's Mitch Wortlieb, who's a big Red Sox fan. And we've also got Burlington representative Kurt Wright, who's definitely a Yankee fan. How about you? Who do you root for? What do you love about baseball? Should baseball go back to Montreal? Give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Eric, I believe, who's calling from Berlin, New Hampshire. Hi, Eric. Welcome to the program.
Yes. Matter of fact, my very first baseball game was at the Green Monster against the Montreal team back when I was in fifth grade, many, many moons ago. And I was born in Saudi, and I'm a big fan of the baseball, and I love it. And to go along with that woman who spoke earlier, I love listening to baseball on the radio. I like to go to the games. I'm not much of watching it on TV, but I'd rather listen to it on the radio, and I love it.
Hey, Eric, what do you love about baseball?
I love when I go to the game. I love the atmosphere, the energy that comes from people in the game. You get the, you know, the watching it. And it's just, for me, it's just, I don't know, I can't really describe any one particular thing, but it's the, you know, the camaraderie, the family, the game itself, and, you know, and again, like I said, I was born in Saudi, so I live, breathe in my Red Sox there, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Eric, many thanks for your call today. And if you've got a thought, any listeners, 1-800-639-2211, love to hear about what you feel about baseball. Mitch, one of the key positions on the team is certainly the person who plays first base. And having a great fielder at that position can make a huge difference. The Red Sox are in a little bit of an experiment this year. Tell us about it.
Well, yeah. I'm not sure you want to experiment with such an important position. And it is an important position because so many ground balls get hit to a shortstop or a second baseman that throw over to first. You got to have a guy that can scoop a ball out of the dirt, make a good play, and get the guy out. So what the Red Sox are doing this year is saying, we have this fellow in Hanley Ramirez, who started out as a Red Sox prospect way back in the day. He was traded back in 2007 to Miami, and a couple of guys came in that helped the Red Sox win the World Series that year. That was a great trade for the Red Sox. We wouldn't want to go back in time and turn that back with Mike Lowell coming in. That was a great trade. But Hanley Ramirez went on to be a superstar for many years playing shortstop. He's a bit older now, and his body has changed. He's a bigger guy. He doesn't have the movement, so he can't play the infield. So last year, they tried him out in left field, thinking we got to keep his bat in the lineup. He can't DH because that's Big Poppy's position to do that. And he was a disaster in left field, an absolute disaster. If you thought Manny Ramirez was an adventure in left field, watch Hanley Ramirez. So that didn't work. So they've still got Hanley Ramirez under contract for a lot of money. So they thought, all right, let's try him out at first base. And that's a risk because he's never played that position before. He's, to his credit, done a lot of work in spring training and the offseason to get ready. And he's looked okay so far. It's a very small sample size, but he's made some good plays in spring training. The idea is if you can keep him on the field and keep his bat in the lineup, then it's worth it if he can work out at first base and not cost you outs. Because if he's not going to scoop the ball, if he's not going to make the good solid plays you're supposed to make, you're going to have too many base runners getting on, and it's going to be a huge problem. Travis Shaw, the guy who I mentioned before, can play first base. But they don't want to have to sit Hanley Ramirez on the bench. So they're going to try this experiment. They're going to do their best. I hope he does great. And if he does, it's all going to work out.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Peter in South Burlington. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hello, hello. The only reason I call is I want to find out if you guys remember a man named Roberto Clemente.
Oh, yes.
3,000 hits.
Okay. Excuse me?
He ended his career with 3,000 hits exactly before he
went on the humanitarian mission. His very last at bat was his last hit.
Right.
One of the great outfielders of all time.
Here. Yeah. I have a small shrine here for Roberto Clemente. I saw Roberto Clemente for the first time in 1961 playing against Philly. And I remember sitting in right field at Forbes Field. Remember Forbes Field?
Absolutely.
And I remember looking down. My father took me. I was only 5 years old. But Roberto Clemente was the first ball player I was ever conscious of. And I remember looking down at right field, watching him play, Roberto Clemente.
Incredible right fielder with a cannon for an arm, hit for high, high average. Not a super home run hitter, but would still hit it probably 15 to 20. And tragically died in a plane crash.
And the Pittsburgh Pirates, I believe, have honored his memory. I think he wore number 21. Is that right? I'm pretty sure that's true. And he, the right field wall in Pittsburgh in their new stadium is 21 feet high in honor of Roberto Clemente. Just one of the greatest players of all time.
Peter, many thanks for your phone call. If you'd like to join the conversation today at Vermont Edition, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. We're talking baseball, maybe baseball in Montreal in the next 3, 4, 5 years, depending on what happens perhaps in Tampa or even in Oakland for that matter. Oakland looking for a new stadium. If they don't get it, they're talking about perhaps moving to Montreal. Baseball is also talking about expansion. A little hard to believe, but that might be a possibility on the horizon. Also, there are a lot of great baseball players who use steroids in their career. It's keeping them out of the Hall of Fame right now. Do you think that's right? Your thoughts about baseball, 1-800-639-2211. Kurt, the Yankees have a new young pitcher. There's a lot of hopes for this person. Tell us about him.
Luis Severino, who came up from the minor leagues last year. I think it was probably a year sooner than they thought he would, but they brought him up. He was 5-3 with an ERA below 3, and he is another guy who can get it up there in the upper 90s. And he's, I believe he was 21 last year, meaning he'll be 22 this year. So he's a young pitcher, and we are pinning a lot of hopes on him. He's in the number 4 slot. I think he pitches, he pitches this afternoon against Detroit Tigers starting in just a little while. So, again, a lot of hopes for this kid. I think a lot of Yankees' hopes for this season will be riding on his right arm. So, he had progressed through the minor leagues pretty rapidly, actually. And, you know, you see the rotation the Mets have developed, and the Yankees are hoping they can develop one young guy that, like, the Mets have a whole core of them, incredibly. So we have great hopes for him. You know, when these young guys come up, there's always the pitch innings limits and that type of thing. So it's going to be interesting to see just how the Yankees use him in terms of that, because if they are to make the playoffs and this kid turns out to be what they think and hope he will be, they want to make sure that he's not worn down by the end of the season.
Mitch, it appears that the Red Sox might have the most expensive bench maybe in the history of the team, maybe in the history of baseball. How did this happen, and do you agree with those decisions?
Yes, it's an expensive bench. When you're looking at a contract for Pablo Sandoval in the $95 million range, I think they owe Hanley Ramirez $66 million, but he's not on the bench right now. Yeah, they've got an expensive bench, but you know what? Those moves were not made under Dave Dombrowski. Those were made under Ben Cherington, who is no longer the GM of the team. So my hope, and this gives me hope, because the Red Sox are saying, look, we understand we got to put the best team on the field, because two straight last place finishes is not going to do it for a big market team like this. We've got to start winning now. So I like the fact that these were not moves that Dave Dombrowski made. They're willing to start Pablo Sandoval on the bench and eat that money, in essence. They're willing to trade him, too. I guarantee you that if a team like the San Diego Padres, who set a major league record, by the way, for going scoreless in their first three games of the season, offense obviously a problem for them. If they were willing to trade for Sandoval and hope that he, you know, plays better back in the National League, they'd do it, I think. So I'm thinking that there may be hope to maybe move Panda out of Boston, and hasn't been a great fit. But I think Dombrowski is willing to do whatever it takes to win now. And that's why I'm holding out hope that even if the pitching is terrible, he will not hesitate. He won't say, well, let's see if they'll work it out. He'll make some moves, and he'll bring in some arms to bolster that team any way that he can. And that's certainly my hope. But yeah, you know, they've got an expensive bench. I mentioned, by the way, to Kurt Wright at the very beginning that the Red Sox also don't have to worry about money, but he didn't listen, because Yankees fans don't listen. They don't listen.
I did.
No, you didn't listen. You criticized me
but
right away.
You started out getting your little plug in there about how, unlike Kurt Wright with the Yankees, yes, you know, who don't have to worry about money.
Well, that's my job as a Red Sox fan, Kurt. I have to do that. I mean, this is, you know, snake and mongoose stuff between our sides here. So, yeah, I had to.
I listen to Red Sox fans all the time.
Oh, I'm sure. I listen to Yankees fans, too. I've heard it all my life.
I will say, I wish Dombrowski hadn't gotten rid of Don Orsillo, though.
Well, I don't know that was his
move. Well, whoever
move exactly.
It was, he came in, and suddenly they got rid of him.
Everybody misses Red... Don Orsillo. He was. Yeah.
We should mention, for folks who don't realize who that is, this is the longtime TV reporter.
Play-by-play guy,
exactly.
And he was terrific. You know, and the guy they brought in, Dave O'Brien, is wonderful, too, and he came from the radio side. I don't understand what that move was all about. I don't think that was Dombrowski's move alone. I could be wrong in that. Nobody likes the move. He ended up in San Diego, by the way. So good for Padres fans to hear Don Orsillo.
Sad day watching that last telecast with him last year.
Oh, and the fans were giving him a standing ovation.
Yeah,
it was just unbelievable. And, you know, it also bears mentioning, I think, too, in the callers that we had before, when Dell called and talked about loving to listen on the radio, the other gentleman did as well, that one of the great, great voices in radio is there for Red Sox fans, and Joe Castiglione. And I do love listening to him. There's a certain timbre to his voice. It's so classic old school baseball. And it is a joy listening to these guys. And they all do a wonderful job. But the Don Orsillo decision is baffling to me, and I wish it hadn't been made either.
Got a lot of people who would like to join the conversation today. So let's start with Rolla, who is calling from Champlain. Hi, Rolla. Welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you guys?
Just great. What's on your mind?
I want to make a quick comment. I'm the fan of Roberto Clemente. His grandson is playing at Canton, SUNY Canton, in Canton, New York. He's gone to school there. He's a freshman. And I think he plays shortstop. But it might be a nice little 3.5-hour trip from Burlington. This gentleman could go see the grandson of Roberto Clemente.
Wow.
That's
so cool.
That's great to know. We really appreciate you calling. Let's turn to Scott in Middlebury. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
Well, I have a question that kind of follows up on a comment Mitch made about Clay Buchholz's first appearance this season. And it got me thinking about the fact that Buchholz started his career, I think it was in August of his rookie season, throwing a no-hitter. Mm-hmm. And what has happened to Clay Buchholz since then?
Well, what's happened to Clay is that he's had some very, very good seasons for the Red Sox, but he's also been hurt a lot, and he's been up and down with his performance. I remember that game when he threw that no-hitter against Baltimore. Just this young kid, you know, he was real quiet, and you didn't expect that out of him. And, of course, you know, when you throw a no-hitter in your first game, you're great things are expected of you. Let's not forget, though, that before he got hurt, he's been an all-star twice. He's had some terrific seasons for the Red Sox. He has great stuff. People question his mental toughness. I don't know enough about it. I'm not inside his head to know if that's the problem. I believe when he's healthy, he can be a legitimate number two and three starter and really give you effective innings to win ball games. This one start in Cleveland, I am willing to look over this because it was a very cold day, you know, 30-degree weather. You probably shouldn't be playing baseball then anyway. But if he has another start like that and then another one, you know, I'm ready to say, you know, we got to start thinking about moving him away or moving him to the bullpen. But he has great stuff. He is a natural talent, and I believe he can still be a winner for the Red Sox.
Mitch, wasn't it just a couple years ago that he started out the season 10-0?
Yeah, he did. As a matter of fact, it was 11-1, I think he started, Kurt. You're right. There was talk about him being an MVP, Cy Young Award, and then he got hurt. And it was an innocuous little thing. It was like he said he felt a neck twinge. And the next thing you knew, he was 2 months on the disabled list. And this is the kind of thing, with Jacoby Ellsbury, Kurt, like you were talking about. It's not these guys' faults all the time, you know, when they get hurt like this. But when you have a propensity for doing that and you're not there to help the team, fans start wondering, they get impatient. And this has been, for better or for worse, fair or unfair, the knock on Clay Buchholz. And he's just going to have to pick it up. He's got no other choice because this is the last year that fans are going to be willing to give him that benefit of the doubt.
Now, Mitch, you know what's going to happen. He's going to have a tough start in the next one and maybe the third start of the season, and people are going to be thinking, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do with this guy? And then he's going to be brilliant.
You think so, huh?
Oh, isn't that his pattern?
I don't know that that's his pattern. I think it's been kind of the opposite, where he starts out brilliant and then all of a sudden dips. That's been the pattern to me, as Kurt was talking about. He had an incredible start a few years ago, pitches real well, and you keep thinking, this is the guy we can depend on, and then, boom, something happens, and he's not there for you. That, to me, has been the Clay Buchholz pattern. But I've watched him for too long, and I've seen he's got a tremendous curveball when it's working. When he's locating his fastball, he's extremely tough to hit. I just want to see that Buchholz on a consistent basis. All Red Sox fans do.
Today in the program, it's our annual baseball show. Your thoughts about baseball, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinsel. It's our annual baseball show. 1-800-639-2211 is our phone number if you'd like to share your thoughts about baseball. And we're going to start in with Bob in Rutland. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I'm going to say I love the game. And been two requests there for what I consider a negative subject, which is about the PEDs. But you've had a lot of great standard bearers. A lot of them more in the past, as far as I'm concerned. You got a few that are record holders, and I don't think some of these record holders that are on PEDs should be allowed in the Hall of Fame because they are not decent standard bearers. Mm. So thank you.
All right, Bob. Kurt, what do you think about this subject?
Well, it's a tricky one because, you know, you had this era, the steroids era, where Are you going to not let anybody in this era of the last however many years you want to count it as? I mean, it's certainly a couple of decades. Didn't mean everybody used them, but we don't know. I mean, we know certain players that did. But, for example, when A-Rod was named on this list that came out of, you know, it was supposed to be anonymous testing and his name got released, there was 100 other players on that list that we didn't find out about. So there's this issue of sort of a fairness. Which, how do you deal with this? Because you have, as I said, you have the players that you know that use steroids. You have the players that you suspect might have used steroids. And then you have... So you have players whose maybe offensive stats could have been inflated because of this, but at the same time, they may be facing some pitchers who were enhanced by steroids. Although one of the big things I think it seems to me that with the steroid use now, I think being tamped down because of the penalties and things that have changed, I think that may attribute to some of the incredible injuries we're seeing. I mean, I've never seen so many injuries, and I think one of the things with steroids was I think it made you recover from injuries quicker. And so I don't know. I think there's got to be a point in time where, I mean, are you going to keep Barry Bonds out forever? Are you going to keep Roger Clemens out forever? Are you going to keep, I mean, do you just keep out the guys that you know used steroids? I mean, Roger Clemens was actually cleared of perjury in that case. So you kind of think that he used them, but you don't, it's not a certainty. And again, what about the players that you don't know about that are on that have been on a list or that just haven't been found out? So I think it's a really tricky issue of keeping these players out of the hall. I mean, you may not have any players join the hall for a long time if you're really going to be fair about it.
It's tricky for sure. And I remember something, Bob, that Bill Lee, the great former Red Sox pitcher, told me on a time, this is a long time ago, when I was filling in for you on Switchboard, the old program, and he was the guest. Of course, Bill Lee, as you know, doesn't pull any punches. And he said, oh, the steroids, give me a break. He said in the 70s, guys were doing other stuff. And he mentioned other substances that they were using. And they were substances. And they were certainly illegal. They weren't testing for them. And he mentioned a whole bunch of names of some very famous players who were very much in the Hall of Fame. So it's extremely tricky. I look at it like, look, Barry Bonds is a guy who would have been in the Hall of Fame if he had never done steroids. He was just that good. We kind of, you know, you can kind of suspect that he did them. You all you have to do is look at pictures, okay? But should he stay out because he would have been anyway? Same thing with Roger Clemens and all this stuff. And then you have to bring in other factors of players who were in the Hall of Fame who had questionable things going on in many years way before then. Nobody is a saint. My view of it is put these guys in the Hall of Fame, but do so with honesty. And next to their plaque say, this guy's in the Hall of Fame. He is also known to have used performance-enhancing drugs. That's a bad thing. We don't want that in the game. Get it all out there. You know, stop pretending that everybody's in the hall who's in the Hall of Fame is some kind of perfect saint. They're human beings. They're not perfect.
That might be the way to do it. And I'll tell you, the other thing is, in the issue of steroids, is let's face it, Major League Baseball looked the other way for a long time about it.
Oh,
they really
sure
did.
Yep.
The game was, things were flying high. Fans were out there coming to the game at record numbers. And, fans love home runs. And you had the great home run chases between Sosa, McGuire, et cetera. And I think Major League Baseball really kind of knew what was going on. And they just kind of looked the other way. So I think there's some, you know, while a lot of players were using it, again, it was this feeling that it was okay, that Major League Baseball. I think it's good that they have cracked down on it. I think, again, we're seeing the results of that. I think the home runs mostly are down. I think now it's more the exception that a player is using it. And I think I do feel better about that, knowing that the game's cleaned up. But, again, can you blame – I don't like it for sure, don't get me wrong. But can you blame some of the players when they knew that other of their competitors were using it? Right. Everybody was looking for an edge, and Major League Baseball was looking the other way.
Yeah.
And Mitch, to your point, there's a book that's just come out. I wish I could remember who wrote it. It was a pitcher for the New York Mets in the 1980s, certainly when the 86 World Series, who talked about the availability of drugs in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Just open, right on the table.
Might be Ron Darling, but I'm not 100% sure about that. A lot of stuff was going on. It's happened throughout the years in baseball, and there have been other problems in baseball as well. And again, my view of it is that I just think that the Hall of Fame should not be – you know, this shrine for people that we say are perfect. And if off-field behavior was something that went into consideration into the Hall of Fame, Ty Cobb should not be anywhere near the Hall of Fame. But, you know, based on what he did, the hits, et cetera, and the way he played the game on the field, he's got to be in there. So if he's going to be in there, I think Barry Bonds eventually should be in there, as well as Roger Clemens, even though I don't approve of what they did.
Mitch, we've got a new rule this year. It concerns sliding into second base.
Mm-hmm.
Tell our listeners why this is important and how it might change the game.
Well, for one thing, it's already affected the outcome of one game this season. The Toronto Blue Jays lost a game the other night to Tampa Bay in the ninth inning when a double play was broken up by Jose Bautista, who went hard into second base, and he forced a wild throw over to first. However, because of this new rule, which is just invented this year, and it's for player safety, his hand made contact with the second baseman before the ball threw over to first. And so by the letter of the law, they overruled it. And those two runs that scored when Bautista broke up the double play were taken back. And Tampa Bay went on to win the game. Players are taught to go hard into second base to break up a double play. That's what every player who's in the game right now has been practicing since they've been in Little League. And to change this now, I understand it's for player safety because last year Chase Utley went hard into second base and broke the leg of Ruben Tejada. Now, that's a horrific event. But this is going to change the game because players are going to be thinking now about how do I slide into second? Do I not go in very aggressively? More double plays are probably going to get turned. It's going to have a huge effect on the game, and I don't think it's going to be a good one. I really think that I understand that I respect trying to keep players safe, but you're going to have more video review of this now, and I've said before on this program that I am a fan of video review for certain things, but this is an invented rule. This is a video review that's going to slow down the game because of a new rule put in place this year. And I just think it's taking away one of the fundamentals of baseball, which is going hard. Don't try to break a guy's leg. Don't try to do what Ty Cobb used to do, which put your spikes up and make a guy bleed. But try to break up that double play any way you can. And all of a sudden just institute this new rule this year, I think it's a mistake.
And I agree with Mitch. I think this sanitizing the game in this way with these new rules, the same thing they did last year with the home plate rule, I think it – you know, they're making rules up for the exception. The play that they saw that was right. Horrific, as Mitch mentioned, and now they want to create a rule so that that never can ever happen again. And I think I don't think it's a good rule. I'm not sure even about the one at home plate.
And do you think, Kurt, it's going to make a difference this year?
Well, I think that... Well, Mitch just mentioned that there was one game that was decided actually based on that rule already. Players, as Mitch said, have always been taught, go in hard, break up that double play. Now they got to be running to second base thinking about that rule. I think the game has worked really brilliantly for you know, 100, 120 years or whatever. And I think some of these rules are really not necessary.
Well, we're going to be following the baseball season. Many thanks to our all-star panel today, Burlington Representative Kurt Wright and, of course, VPR's Mitch Wortlieb. We'll all get together at the All-Star break and see how our predictions and projections are holding up. Many thanks for being on the program.
Always a pleasure, Bob. Thank you so much.
That's our show for today. Monday, we look at the future of 911 call handling in the state. Conflicting statements have called into question whether the Department of Public Safety will continue to handle some of these calls. We'll discuss the divide between public safety and the E911 board and how it might be settled. Send your questions or comments to VermontEdition@vpr.net and listen Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sungari and Sam Gale Rosen with production assistance from Anna St. Marie. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.